Welcome to Orphans No More, a radio extension of Justice for Orphans Ministry, a program dedicated to rally the church for the cause of the fatherless, advocating Christian families to adopt and get involved with foster care here in the Capital District, as well as globally, and encouraging and supporting those who've heard and heeded the call of James 1:27. Join your host, Sandra Flack.
The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is upon me, for the Lord has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to comfort the brokenhearted and to proclaim that captives will be released and prisoners will be freed. That is Isaiah 61, verse 1. This is Orphans No More, a media extension of Justice for Orphans. I'm your host, Sandra Flack. Our guest today is local, single, foster, and adoptive mom, Sarah Sebast. Welcome to the show, Sarah.
Hi, thank you.
You are welcome. It's an honor to have you on the show with us today, and I'm so excited that you'll be sharing your story with our listeners. You are a mom to 5 children, all adopted from foster care. So let me see if I took accurate notes here, Sarah. Your daughter, Alexa, is currently 23.
Yeah.
Liana is 14.
Yep.
Amira is 9.
Amira, yeah.
Amira, sorry about that.
Okay.
Andrea is 6.
Yep.
And Gio is 4.
Yes.
I did it. That is a full house. And as a single woman, what led you to become a foster parent and then adopt your children?
Well, I've always had a heart for hurting and abused kids. And I had gone on several mission trips to work with abused children during the summers when I was in school. Sorry. And I ended up really wanting to stay 1 year and was just crying. And one of my friends said, you know, there's so many kids that are right in our own country that need help. And I just never thought about that before. Like, you don't think about the United States as being a place that has so much heartache and so much hurting and kids that really need help. And I was a teenager at the time, so I just kind of filed it back into my mind. And when I was 27, one of my older friends who had fostered and adopted said to me, you really need to be a foster parent. And I was like, I'm single. I'm 27. Like, they're not going to let me foster. And she was like, oh, yes, they are. So I ended up interviewing with several different foster agencies and then settled on Parsons. And a month after I contacted them, I was certified and had my first child.
Wow. Now, you had shared with me that you had been told by other agencies that teenagers is who you would most likely get placed with. And you didn't really feel equipped to foster a teen because were so young yourself. And but your first placement was a teenager. So why did you say yes to Alexa?
Well, my age group had been 0 to 12, and I had just felt like I was 27. Teenagers are not going to respect me. I really felt like I wasn't equipped to handle the teenage, just all the different stuff that comes with teenagers. And especially being single, I just didn't feel okay with that. When I got certified, just before I was finished certifying, actually, I got a phone call saying that there was a 15-year-old girl that was in Boston Children's Hospital. She was very ill. She had been in multiple different placements, and her last placement had just dropped her off at the hospital and didn't come back. And just said that they were not equipped to handle her medical needs. And she'd had a kidney transplant, and she had multiple birth defects that affected a lot of different things in her body. And they ended up saying she's 15, but she's been through so much physically that she's more like 12 mentally. And they might have just said that because they wanted me to take her in, but I prayed about it and felt total peace. I was not completed with my fostering yet. I had like another 2 days left. They had to come and do a home study. So they ended up coming that day and finished up my home study, got all my paperwork done. And the next day I had said yes, that I would take her in. I asked for some details and was told that she most likely would not live. And I was going to kind of be her sort of like a hospice placement so that she would at least have a place to be where she was taken care of without it being in the hospital until she died. I was slightly scared, to be honest. I was terrified. But she just needed a place to love her, I think. There was no reason to live when you're 15 and you're still in foster care and nobody wants the teenagers. Like, people don't want teenagers.
Let alone a medically fragile teenager.
Right. So she'd actually been in the hospital for 2 weeks past when they had cleared up. Like, she was fine for the past 2 weeks, and she was just in the hospital because they couldn't find a home for her. Mm. And I think that's what really, when they said that to me, I just kept thinking, how can you leave somebody in the hospital for 2 weeks with, and like, she had nobody, there was nobody for her.
But you fell in love with her.
I did. She came home, and the first night, she actually asked me to adopt her, and it was a long car ride home that we got to do lots of bonding, so it was about 4 hours, and we did a lot of talking and laughing and just hanging out and getting to know each other on the way home, and that first night, I was tucking her in, and she asked me to adopt her, and I kind of froze. Like, I hadn't even considered adoption, because in my mind, she was just there temporarily. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of laughed it off and said, you don't even know me yet. What if I don't, you know, what if I do something crazy that you hate? What if I sing at the top of my lungs and you don't like that? What if I just drive you crazy? And we just kind of laughed it off. But it became something where she asked pretty consistently. And we just kind of had a really good connection right from the very beginning. And she was definitely not a typical teenager. She'd gone through so much abuse and so much physical difficulty, but she never really lost. She had a really sweet heart. She had a very calm spirit. She was not a angry, aggressive teenager by any means.
Wow. And she wasn't expected to live, and she was 15,
correct,
but now she's 23. So what happened?
Well, she came home, and we had to literally scrub everything every time you touched it. Like, I walked around with bleach and water everywhere. Hand sanitizer. She had a very low immune system, and we wiped everything down after we touched it. I took her back in a week, and they said, how many times has she been hospitalized in the past week? And I said, none. And they were like, no, I mean, how many times did you have to take her to the ER? And I said, no, she's been fine. And the doctor looked at me like I was crazy and looked it up on the computer, and he was like, oh, you're right. And so he let us go home, and then a week later, we had to go back and get checked again, and it was the same thing, and he just couldn't believe that she hadn't been in the hospital in 2 weeks, and then we did it for another week, and then he ended up moving it to every other week. We had to go back to Boston for a checkup, and then every month, and she just consistently did great. She had a better immune system than I did. Honestly, I would get a cold, and she would not, and we talked about it at one point, and she just kind of said, I am fine. Like, I'm comfortable. I'm happy. And I really think it was just, she needed somebody to care and somebody to love her and to tell her that she was worth it. And she did not go back in the hospital until she graduated high school. She was healthy. She did awesome. And so it was about 4 years. She was not in the hospital for 4 years.
Wow.
And, she's done amazing, and she was in the hospital the one time, and then it's been another about 4 years since then.
That is incredible. So really, being in a family literally gave her hope and love and saved her life.
Saved her life, yeah.
Wow. And then you continued to foster during that time, and Liana and, help me, Amira, were placed with you. Tell us about that.
So Alexa was adopted in December, and right after she got adopted, we had two little girls that were placed with us that went home right after she was adopted, and it kind of broke our hearts. They'd been with us for about a year and a half, and it was really hard to have them go home, and we took about a month and a half to really just grieve the loss, because it really was. It's hard when kids go home. Even when you know it's good, it's still hard because you've poured into them. We ended up talking after about a month and a half, and said, Alexa and I talked and said, are you ready? Do you feel like, you know, it's time to start fostering again? And she was really on board. And she'd been in rough homes before, so she knew. She kept saying, we have a good home. We need to help other kids. So we opened our home up again, and within a couple of weeks, I think, we got a phone call for two little girls. They were three and eight. And I said, yes, we got a little bit of background on them. It wasn't all correct, but while I was listening, I was praying and just, I had a peace and I said, okay, we'll take them. So I went to meet them and pick them up, and their older sister was with them as well. And she ended up being just totally panicked, and we didn't understand fully, but she just was panicked about the girls going and her not being there. And she was 14 at the time. And so I brought all three of them back and just said, I'll take her for the weekend, give her a chance to get to know where the kids are, and then she'll be comfortable and then it'll be okay. Well, she ended up staying for quite a while with Liana and Amira. And while the kids were there, Amira, who was three, said, just at dinner one day, said, so Matt hit me in the head like this and like smacked her head. And I kind of froze and I was like, okay, who's Matt? And Diana and Liana both froze and ended up, they started talking, and they had been really badly abused in the last foster home that they had been in. Mm. So that kind of made sense with why Diana had been so panicked about the girls leaving. I reported it, and we started dealing with some of the aftermath of that. Amira really did well. Her doctor said she didn't know if Amira would ever be normal, she would ever develop normally. She'd been very starved. She'd been locked in a crib for a year. Mm. Just, she was so little. She was more like a one and a half year old, but she was so tiny.
And this was in a foster home.
In a foster home, oh. Yeah. Yeah. So, and Liana was very tiny as well, and she'd gone through a lot of the same stuff, but she would get locked in her room, and she would get abused in this home. And Amira just thrived. She was three, she was little, but she just had this amazing spirit. She was happy, she was joyful, and Liana really struggled to attach. So she was always tougher. She had a great heart, and she would just kind of flip back and forth. It was almost like she was dying to connect and then terrified at the same time.
Mm.
But they were with us. I think I'd had them about two and a half years before I finally got to adopt them. But their parents ended up surrendering rights, and then we adopted.
Wonderful. And then you got a call from a friend and fellow foster mom. Tell us about that.
So after we'd adopted Liana and Amira, I took another month and a half off, and just bonded as a family with the four of us. And I eventually opened up my home again and said, all right, we're ready. I'm not done. Like, I know I have more room. So I think it was within days this time, I got a phone call from a friend of mine who lived down the road and said, I got these two kids on an emergency respite placement. Like, they had just been removed from the home. And the little guy was 11 months and his sister was three. And she said, she had an 11-month-old as well. So, her son, Nicholas, and Gio were, like, days apart. And she was like, Sarah, I can't do it. I cannot keep them. But they needed a place, so I took them on an emergency. But I think they're supposed to be yours. And she knew I was looking for, I wanted to keep Amira, the youngest. And at this point, Amira was five. So she knew I wanted to have anyone that was younger than five. And so I ended up saying, can I come meet them? And she was like, I'll do you one better. How about you take them on respite for me so I can sleep? Because Gio just never slept. He was terrified. He would just cry all day. He'd cry all night. He had nightmares and night terrors. And she was exhausted. So she and I called Parsons and said, can Sarah take them on respite for a few days? So I ended up taking them for three nights and just absolutely fell in love with these two.
Mm.
And I ended up having to take them back, and I cried when I took them back. I called Parsons and tried to say, can I just keep them? Can we just extend the respite? We'll go to court. We'll get it all settled. And they said, no, you have to take them back, but we'll talk to court. So I ended up petitioning for them, and it took another about 2.5 weeks. And by then, Gio had just turned 12 months old, but I got them back, and they came, and it was February 4th. They were removed on January 4th, and it was exactly a month later that I got them. So they came, and they were 12 months old and three. And Andrea was three. She was so scared, but it was almost like when she smiled, my brother said, it looks like she's never smiled before. Like, it's like she doesn't know how to smile. And she just had like a very flat affect. And then Gio was just terrified, and he would just cry, and he really settled in with me. But anytime there was any sudden movement, if somebody came in the house, if any, just anything out of the ordinary. One time I moved furniture, and he saw me moving the furniture and just started sobbing, like he thought we were going to move, I think. So it was definitely difficult. There was a very little sleep that first couple of years. It took him a long time to settle in. He attached very quickly to me. But it's, he's been in therapy for a while, and his therapist said it's like a, it's an insecure attachment. He's terrified I'm going to leave him all the time. No, anxious attachment. I'm sorry. It's an anxious attachment. So he's always hypervigilant, making sure I'm right there because I make him feel safe. Other people sometimes don't.
Wow. Incredible. So you adopted all five children.
I did.
You're a single mom. How do you do it? What kind of support system do you have?
My biggest support system is my family. I have six brothers, and three of them live right here. And my parents are extremely supportive. They take my phone calls pretty much whenever I need to talk. We've had multiple emergency room visits with, you know, croup. Gio gets croup and just all sorts of things in the middle of the night, and they will run right over and keep the other kids. My one brother, every weekend, he takes one of my kids for one night, and they do crazy fun uncle stuff. They go on hikes, they go hunting, they dig holes in his backyard, just fun things that I either can't do or it's just not as fun with mom because Uncle Kay is way better. They have been a huge support. If we're really struggling with, we can't buy something because, you know, there's been lots of, a weighted blanket for Gio, for example. His therapist kept saying he really should have a weighted blanket. It might really help him feel comforted. And they're expensive. And my parents found out, and 3 days later, I had a weighted blanket delivered to my door. Aww. Just like really awesome. Anything that I've needed, they've really stepped up. And I have really great friends. I have several that have, they'd come over and just a couple nights, a couple days, actually, they would just come over and be like, you know what, go take a nap. We'll watch the kids for a couple of hours. Go sleep.
And that's huge.
To kind of get through.
Yeah.
Huge.
That's huge.
Yeah.
And your parents live, I know, close by, you said, and your mom actually takes, is it one child each day or one a week? How does that work?
She takes one child every week for an afternoon or a morning. I can choose what's going to work better. And she does one-on-one time with them. And she said she loves doing it because she gets to bond with just one and spend focused time with just one of them. And they love visits to grandma's house.
Yeah, that is awesome. So it doesn't matter if we're single or married, it takes a village, as they say, right?
It does, absolutely.
And the church should be at the center of every village. So how has the church supported you? Have you been supported by your church?
Really, I haven't been supported by the church, but not. It's been mostly because I've had so much support, I haven't had to reach out. Our pastor's very supportive as far as when I have stories to tell, he listens. And but it hasn't been a whole lot of, like, what can I do to help you? Because I haven't needed as much of that. In fact, right now I'm trying to start a ministry to help other foster and adoptive parents in our church because I know how much support is needed as a foster parent and now adoptive parent. And I don't think most people understand what goes into it. It's kind of just like, oh, yeah, you have kids.
Right.
But it's so much more because their needs are so much greater in most cases. Not every case, but in a lot of cases, these kids have gone through so much that they have so many multiple and different needs than other kids do.
Now, you did share with me that at your church, there's a pastor who has connected with your little guy, Gio.
Our family pastor, yes. Pastor Josh is incredible with Gio. Gio really struggles with separation, and when he would get dropped off at his Sunday school class, he would just cry and kick and scream, and then eventually he would just curl up in a ball in the corner, and he would not come out until I came to get him. And this happened every single week for months and just never got better. Pastor Josh just joined the church maybe 6 months ago, and he just totally connects with Gio and calls him his little buddy, and Gio will go to him anytime, any day, any place. And when he starts to get upset when I'm going to leave him in class, whoever is there will go and grab Josh, and Pastor Josh will come over and he'll be like, Gio, come on, and Gio will go right with him. He's been such a huge asset to us. So yes, he's definitely been amazing.
Wonderful. So Sarah, you have a couple of things on your heart that I know you want to be sure our listeners hear about. What are they?
First and foremost, I would just say that if you have a heart to help children that are hurting, I know not everybody can do it, but if you have a heart or if God is laying it on your heart, it doesn't matter if you're single or young or old, do it. We need Christian homes that are going to be supportive and that are going to love on these kids, because I've had over 15 children go through my home. Some were short-term, some were long-term placements, and then the five that stayed. But of those, only Andrea and Gio, my last little two, were not abused in foster care. We have so many abusive homes, and for whatever reason, they're overwhelmed, they don't have support, they're just, I don't know why, but there are so many abusive homes, and we need good ones. We need safe homes that are going to love on these kids and share about God with them. And second, if you are not a foster parent or you don't feel like you can foster and you know other people that are, something as simple as making a meal once in a while and bringing it over when you know that they've had a rough week, or if one of their kids are sick, or coming over, and one of the hugest things that helped me was somebody coming over and saying, just go take a nap. Like, I will stay up with the kids. I'll watch them for the next few hours. Just go sleep. And I was still in the home, so the kids still knew that I was there and I wasn't leaving, but I was able to go take a nap or go do their shopping for them. Grab their credit card and go do their, you know, grab their list and go shop for them. Just anything that would make their life a little bit easier, because some days I don't ask very often for help because I feel like I can do it, so I'm going to do it anyway. But there have been days when it's just exhausting. And, you know, Gio was up at 4 a.m. this morning. And that's a lot of days where he's having nightmares, he's having night terrors, and he finally hits a point where he just will not go back to sleep, and then we're up. So there's a lot of little things that can help. Give them a call and just ask how they're doing. Like, just little things that make a huge difference to somebody who's having a tough time with the kids.
Yeah, those are two huge things that I agree. I too would like our listeners to think about and pray about these things, because I don't think most people really realize, you know, the first thing that you shared about, there are abusive foster homes out there. And I know families are screened and background checks are done and training is provided, but it really isn't for everybody. And
right.
These children come into care, foster care, at no fault of their own. Something terrible happened in their own biological family. So they've already suffered some sort of trauma, abuse, loss, neglect, whatever it was that landed them in foster care. So they're already traumatized and wounded. And then to be placed in a foster family that abuses them further. I mean, some of the things that you shared about being locked in a crib for a year and those things are just heartbreaking and should never, ever happen. And we at Justice for Orphans are all about, you know, for to us, justice for an orphan is a safe, loving family, especially if it's a safe, loving Christian family. So we want our listeners to pray about this. Could the Lord be putting it on your heart to become a foster parent or a respite parent where you can give the full-time foster family a little bit of a break on the weekends or whatever that would be? So consider these things. And then number two there were be a support, because like we said, not everybody is called to foster or to adopt, but we are all called, according to James 1:27, to care. And there's so many easy ways that you can care. Give a foster parent a nap. How hard is that to just hang out with their kiddos, play some board games or throw the football around or whatever, so that a parent can get a couple hours of sleep or run and get their groceries? It's not easy to drag five children to the grocery store, and especially children with some special needs. It's very, very hard. So when you're at the store, pick up some groceries for a family anyway. So there's so many different ways people can help. So Sarah, thank you for all that you have done and are doing on behalf of children in crisis. And thank you for sharing your story with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
It was a pleasure. And if you are interested in becoming a foster parent, you can find a list of local agencies on our website, justicefororphansny.org. Just click on the foster care tab and some local New York agencies will pop up there, and you can find ways also to help. We offer those suggestions all the time on how you can help and support a foster family. And we thank you for listening today. You can find more episodes of this show on our website at justicefororphansny.org. We're also on iTunes, Google Play, and Podbean. Just search for the show by name, Orphans No More. And be sure to follow or subscribe to the podcast. Every 25th follower gets a free bag of Greater Things Roasters coffee. So we're going to give you a coffee for listening. And remember, JFO is a nonprofit ministry on a mission to rally the church for the cause of the fatherless. We inspire, educate, and equip the body of Christ to walk out James 1:27 in whatever way God calls you. Learn more at justicefororphansny.org.
Thank you for supporting this program by listening today, sharing what you've heard, and praying for orphans and children in need everywhere. More information is available at justicefororphansny.org. Visit and discover how you can make a difference in a child's life. And be sure to tune in to Orphans No More next Friday.